Bill Wilson didn't read academic journals or consult many doctors before founding AA. A few years after he achieved sobriety, he wrote the now famous 12 steps in a rush one night while sitting in bed. He chose the number 12 because there were 12 apostles. And some aspects of the program are not just unscientific, they can seem downright strange. Take, for instance, AA's insistence that alcoholics attend 90 meetings in 90 days, a stretch of time, it appears, chosen at random. Or the program's intense focus on spirituality, as articulated in Step 3, which says that alcoholics can achieve sobriety by making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. 7 of the 12 steps mention God or spirituality, which seems odd for a program founded by a one-time agnostic who, throughout his life, was openly hostile toward organized religion. AA meetings don't have a prescribed schedule or curriculum. Rather, they usually begin with a member telling his or her story, after which other people can chime in. There are no professionals who guide conversations, and few rules about how meetings are supposed to function. In the past 5 decades, as almost every aspect of psychiatry and addiction research has been revolutionized by discoveries in behavioral sciences, pharmacology, and our understanding of the brain, AA has remained frozen in time. Because of the program's lack of rigor, academics and researchers have often criticized it. AA's emphasis on spirituality, some claimed, made it more like a cult than a treatment. In the past 15 years, however, a reevaluation has begun. Researchers now say the program's methods offer valuable lessons. Faculty at Harvard, Yale, the University of Chicago, the University of New Mexico, and dozens of other research centers have found a kind of science within AA that is similar to the one Tony Dungy used on the football field. Their findings endorse the golden rule of habit change. AA succeeds because it helps alcoholics use the same cues and get the same reward, but it shifts the routine. Researchers say that AA works because the program forces people to identify the cues and rewards that encourage their alcoholic habits, and then helps them find new behaviors. When Claude Hopkins was selling Pepsodent, he found a way to create a new habit by triggering a new craving. But to change an old habit, you must address an old craving. You have to keep the same cues and rewards as before, and feed the craving by inserting a new routine. Take steps 4 to make a searching and fearless inventory of ourselves, and 5 to admit to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. It's not obvious from the way they're written, but to complete those steps, someone has to create a list of all the triggers for their alcoholic urges, said J. Scott Tonagan, a researcher at the University of New Mexico who has studied AA for more than a decade. When you make a self-inventory, you're figuring out all the things that make you drink, and admitting to someone else all the bad things you've done is a pretty good way of figuring out the moments where everything spiraled out of control. Then, AA asks alcoholics to search for the rewards they get from alcohol. What cravings, the program asks, are driving your habit loop? Often, intoxication itself doesn't make the list. Alcoholics crave a drink because it offers escape, relaxation, companionship, the blunting of anxieties, and an opportunity for emotional release. They might crave a cocktail to forget their worries, but they don't necessarily crave feeling drunk. The physical effects of alcohol are often one of the least rewarding parts of drinking for addicts. There is a hedonistic element to alcohol, said Ulf Müller, a German neurologist who has studied brain activity among alcoholics. But people also use alcohol because they want to forget something or to satisfy other cravings. And these relief cravings occur in totally different parts of the brain than the craving for physical pleasure.